Everyone. Today is Tuesday, March 5, 2013. The Senate E-12 Budget Division will come to order. We have four bills before us, two from Senator Kiffmeyer, Senate Files 522 and 618, and that will be followed by Senate File 494, Senator Jensen, and Senate File 595, Senator Tomassoni. It will be our attempt to lay these over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. At this point, we'll ask Senator Kiffmeyer to proceed with Senate File 522. Welcome and thank you for your punctuality to you and your testifiers.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We appreciate your putting us on your agenda, taking your committee time for very important bills for the Elk River School District 728. And yes, my members were not only punctual, they were here early and braved the weather. Wouldn't you know it? We get the one day of a major snowstorm, so we appreciate that very much. The first bill is a debt transfer from the account, and I have here with me today to help in the knowledge and information. So I have Superintendent Bezik, who will lead off with the presentation of the details of House Senate File 522, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And Dr. Bezik, please state your name for the record.
Dr. Mark Bezik, Superintendent of Schools, District 728, which is the Elk River area. Thank you for allowing us to come this morning, Chairman Wieger and committee members. I'd like to start out with referencing this handout, which is a PowerPoint handout, and I'll go through this very, very quickly. It'll basically tell you a little bit about the Elk River District. We're up in the northwest corner of the metro area, and on a good day I can make it down here in 35 minutes, and today it took an hour and 45 minutes.
Superintendent, is there school today?
No, we called it off, actually, because of some of our areas on the northern part of the district. A couple of townships are a little slow at getting their plows out.
Safety first, we understand at least 100 districts have made that decision.
So. Yeah, but no matter if we call it off or leave it on, we're going to get criticized. It's a no, it's a no-win deal. It's like closing a school. you catch it no matter what. Again, I'm going to reference this, and this really tells you who we are and why we're going after the two bills that we have in front of you. On the first page in the middle of the middle frame there, our mission and really our tagline is to educate, inspire, and empower all of our students throughout the district. The bottom slide there does tell you that we are the eighth largest district. We have a little under 13,000 kids. Our land mass is equal to the largest district in the state, Anoka-Hennepin. We cover a lot of area. We cover five counties, about 15 communities and townships. So we're a very diverse group there. We've had some very innovative programs in our district. One of the reasons we're in the financial pinch we're in is because of this explosive growth we've seen from the late 90s into about 2008 when the economy turned. You know, we grew about 300 to 500 students per year, and that put a heavy debt load on us for building facilities. And again, that put the crunch on us. In 5 years, we grew by over 3,600 students, which, when you look at that, that number alone is larger than 80% of the school districts in the state. So just to give you a picture on how fast we were building buildings and putting kids into boxes, so to speak. On the second page there, top frame, you can see how our special populations have grown. Our diversity is growing. The middle frame on that second page, we were on a budget of roughly around $125 million. So we go through about $2.5 million a week. We're a big operation, over 2,200 employees. We've done a remarkable job in the last 7 years with our finances and creating transparency to the public. We run on a very tight shoestring there. Administratively, the average cost is usually about 5% in any district. We run about 3.4, which, again, there's a lot of people wearing a lot of different hats. The bottom frame is an important one because it basically shows I have to take out about $5 million in our budget over the next few years because of shortfalls. Now, that stimulus money that came through a few years ago saved, I think, almost every district in the state and country for a while, but now it's time to pay the piper, and we have to schedule about $5 to $6 million worth of reductions over the next couple of years. Again, that's the background for the ask of these dollars here. If you look on page 3 in the middle, Debt service expense per student, you can see how we compare to the state, and we have a very high, we're a very high debt district. Our people are paying their fair share of taxes, but it's going to retire debt rather than going into the classroom. And that it's all eaten up. Our tax capacity is eaten up by debt service. We've gone out to the voters this last fall to pass a renewal, which they did. The second question for additional funding to cover some of our deficit was turned down. So it's like they gave us the keys to the car, but they're not giving us any gas to move forward in it. The bottom frame there actually shows our operating levy compared to the different areas in the state. We are significantly underfunded in the local effort also. On page 4, however, with the tight funding and the lack of programming, you see our test scores. We've been doing remarkably well in the last 7 years as far as our student achievement. And that is all I will cover on this. The next two frames really are the two bills that we have in front of you. A couple other notes on this fund transfer. It's a transfer out of our excess debt service money that we levy 105%, and that 5% builds up over the years. And we have roughly about $4 million in that account that we can't touch. Now, several years ago, this request was in the education bill, but I can't remember if it was 2 or 3 years ago, that education bill kind of went down in the last hours of the session, and we didn't get that transfer. These are voter-approved dollars for capital projects, and we have many projects that are of the capital nature and educational programming nature that we'd like to invest in. And I'll give you just three quick examples. We have a biomedical magnet that we're looking at putting in Zimmerman, the northern part of our district, as a magnet school. We have also an online virtual academy that we're coordinating efforts right now to put in. And one of the pieces with online learning there, we've got some very crowded buildings, and rather than put a $25 million addition onto a building, I'd rather invest maybe $2 million in the online academy and take kids off-site into different learning cafes throughout the district. Then another innovation piece that we're looking at is taking a look at an innovative K-8 school of choice, which is a 45-15 type school, standards based, and it's really based on the statute of 123B 0.045, which was district created site governed schools legislation. There's very few districts that are looking at this, but what it really does is takes the best of the charter schools under a school district governance model to put in place, and I know we can run our schools more efficiently and see some greater student achievement in that model. But the gist of this is that we're trying to do new things, and we're trying to be innovative, but we don't have the dollars. And the reason I mention these projects are, we're always told, think outside the box. And, we've been thinking, and I think any district can come in here and say, hey, we've got this idea, and that idea. But you know what? We just don't have the dollars for it. Here we've got a pool of money that we can use that has very little impact. It's already there. It's voter approved that we can invest in these projects. As we're told to start thinking out of the box, we need to start acting out of the box. And that's what I'm asking for the legislature to act outside the box and giving us some latitude on using these funds in a creative way to increase student achievement and move us into the future. I guess I look at it in other words, if we're in manufacturing, if we want a new product, we have to do several things. We have to retool the factory, we have to retrain the employees, but we also have to look at creative ways to finance that operation, and that's what we're doing here. And I mentioned before, 3 years ago this was in the education bill, but the education bill, I think, went up in flames or down in smoke, what have you, at the last minute of the session. And again, I'm just asking you to move this forward so we can invest in our students. I've got almost 13,000 kids that are on the short end of programming, and programs like this would really add a lot to our district.
Thank you, Superintendent. The proposal 3 years ago, did that have a sum certain as opposed to the 80% that you?
I think it was almost identical to this. Oh, yeah, it had a percentage.
Okay, and Superintendent, if we did have a dollar amount, approximately,
it's about $3.2 million of the $4 million that we're asking to transfer. 80% of, like I mentioned, we have roughly about $4 million in the account, and we're asking for an 80% transfer of that into the general fund. And again, we have a lot of capital projects, and most of this would come under the capital realm that it was approved by the voters for.
Thank you. Questions? The division members. Yeah, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe Senate counsel might be able to refresh our memories. I thought the excess that was designated for capital was automatically adjusted at the state level, so that if a district's carrying excess, well, of course, I suppose it depends if the debt is actually paid off. If the bonds are paid off and there's excess in the funds, or excess in then it would be automatic, maybe. Someone maybe just refresh our memory.
Sure. Chairman, Senator, basically my understanding of the process is that the money's carried in the debt redemption fund, and then it's automatically reduced once it reaches a certain threshold to pay back the debt and reduce the levy. And so that's where the cost is coming from, is because since they qualify for debt service aid, basically it's a levy increase since the money's not being used to decrease the levy. Does that clarify?
Mr. Chairman, as I read the description and the assumptions, and I think the rationale as I was listening was that there's an excess in the debt redemption fund.
Correct.
But yet there's outstanding debt.
Correct.
So how do the bondholders look at the fact that you would take revenue out of the debt redemption fund and use it for something other than reducing your capital or your debt on the bonds?
Superintendent Bezick.
Thank you, Chairman. Senator Stump, we levy 105%, and this is that, and we, for the last 10 years, we've made our obligations, and this is why this piece is hanging out there as excess dollars. Now, we've gone from 180 just down to 120 million this year, and that pot just keeps building. And that, again, we've been after this for years, and we've touted this around our district and with our voters, and people are saying, go, get it, because we are going to use it for similar type projects.
Mr. Chairman.
There is sufficient funds, more than enough funds, mm-hmm. to meet the obligations of the bondholders. So my understanding, this would not affect their bond rating or influence or anything like that as far as the needs required to service this debt. Okay.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kiffmeyer, I think that's true. But I thought the adjustment for the 5% was automatic at the I thought the State Department of Education made that, either alerted the district that you should reduce your levies on, or because we went through this discussion a number of times, and you're absolutely right. At 105%, you'd not only cover the bonds, but you'd have an excess. And a lot of districts were doing the same thing, building up excess capital. But the statute says that you're supposed to reduce the levies with that 5% or whatever what's left over. And districts weren't doing that. And I thought the department actually either alerted you or alerted the districts. And maybe somebody from the department could refresh my memory. Because this is happening statewide. I mean, any district that that's levying for capital and expenses will be levying 105%. And the extra 5% is really assurance that to the bondholders that buy those bonds that you'll have the debt service available.
Mr. Chair, that is true. We do understand that it's required by state law that you do that 105%, just to be sure. And so they have done that, and that accumulation may be the case. But Superintendent Bezik will have more comment.
Yeah, just Senator Stump, I was just checking with our finance director here. And we're required by law to levy that 105%, and then it is an automatic reduction in that when there's so when we've met our obligations, there's that. I think we got hit by about $700,000 out of that fund. Our levy was cut back. It's an automatic trigger, as I think you were alluding to, by the State Department. So it automatically goes down eventually.
Mr. Chairman, what we're advocating here, though, is that the residents of our district. The sentiment from our district is that they would rather have things like the investing in the online academy, doing these things. These are the things that they want, and that making use of those funds is something that's beneficial directly to the district and for purposes by which it was originally assessed.
Superintendent Bees.
Thanks, Chair. We're a very property-poor district, and if you look in our handout there, as far as the levy that we're able to, is significantly below the metro average. And, again, we're looking at these dollars as dollars we can invest in student programming that we can't get anywhere else. And, again, on the other hand, we are in a reduction mode also, and that's the trick of our business is to, even though we are in a reduction mode, to keep our district moving forward. And again, this is just one of those creative, out-of-the-box ways of trying to do that.
Mr. McHenry, did you want to add anything further regarding state involvement? I believe the record showed Mr. McHenry said it's been covered. Correctly? Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee on Senate File 522? Senator Kiffmeyer, any concluding remarks before we lay it over?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In particular on this particular bill, our county is particularly hard hit. And so our housing values, we also do not have a lot of commercial property. And so it's a really difficult district, and yet we're right next to the metro area. And so the competition, the demands, the expectations are certainly there, but this is one way. And the reason why I gave this my support is because of what I've seen Superintendent Bezik and the board and others as far as being efficient, effective. The things they want to do with it will help them instead of a $23 million building. To add the $2 million to do the online academy and help absorb some of that and move at the times, I think that justifies your support of this language. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And Senator Kiffmeyer, we're very aware of the explosive growth,
yes.
You could call it that, and it was a great place to locate, et cetera. Was there much dialogue between the school district and the various townships, municipalities that granted the permits and recognizing there was going to be a lot of growth, and usually there's the anticipation you'll have the infrastructure to do that in planning, and sometimes we see that there's going to be some longer-term financial consequences, but in terms of dialogue between the district and the municipalities, townships that would approve all the growth. Yes.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. There was a lot of that. It's just that even in spite of all that and doing planning in the developments in the county and so on, even still, also we got the North Star at the same time. So the attention drawn to it in our community, but probably the biggest thing is just that it slowed our growth, and they did do that. But nonetheless, because of our proximity to the metro area, there's a lot of people who like living out in the country and being able to have that advantages and yet being proximity. So
yes.
I think we had about a 60% increase in our population in Sherburne County. The 10 years before, it almost doubled. 10 years before that, it almost doubled. So it is one of those areas. And not only that, our age demographics, very young. and lots of children. If you go to our churches, if you go to the grocery store, we're just a wonderful booming community, and that tends to attract other families as well. They like to be with the young crowd.
Thank you. Superintendent Buzik.
Senator Wicker, this is going to happen again to us. As building permits are already booming and as projects are on board, I project another 2 to 3 years and the same piece is going to happen to us. We're not scheduled to really have a significant drop in our debt service for another 7 to 8 years, I believe, is when and maybe 10, and then we're free and clear of a lot of this debt. So we're going to be on the bubble here. As Senator Kiffmeyer mentioned, you know, with this North Star Rail, all the building that's coming up through Ramsey and what have you, it's going to hit us. It's going to hit us again, and we need to be prepared for that. And we have, as I mentioned before, 5 counties, 15 municipalities, 4 major cities that we deal with, and we're in constant communication with those people and their building, their zoning people, so we know what's coming online, when, and what's happening. And so those conversations are happening.
And Mr. Chairman, not only this school district touches several counties, but the major portion is in Sherburne, and another major portion is in Otsego, St. Michael, Albertville, Hanover's in Buffalo School District. But those three entities are matching the growth that you see, especially in the Big Lake, Elk River, Zimmerman area. So it's just the nature of where we are located, but it also puts a lot of pressure on the building structures. And then they really focus on the core education. But the ability to sustain and to do that, having this debt transfer to have to money you be used part of that to help to go to the online academy helps us absorb that without so much pressure on another building. I think that's a really good way to invest.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer will lay Senate File 522 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we'll continue the discussion on Elk River and equity with Senate File 618. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 618 is a effort by our school district, again, to realize that with the population of the school district, there are many students, and Superintendent Buzik will give you more information in regards to how many live in that area. But because of the law that says where your school district office is located helps to dictate whether you get metro funding or you get non-metro, it's a big deal. And the particular, what we would prefer would be that that would be a technical issue and that this school district could be designated as more equivalent to Metro because of its large number of students, and Superintendent Buzik will give more details with that. But in particular, this bill addresses those students who do live in the Metro counties, that at least they would be able to get the money that would ordinarily have gone to them if they were in a school district that had a metro office. So this bill and the material that addresses it, so I would ask for your support in particular for this. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have the chair of the Elk River School Board, Jane Bunting, who would like to make some comments, if that's okay.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome, Ms. Bunting.
Thank you. I come today with my business
lens. Ms. Bunting, for the tape, if you could just restate your name.
Oh, Jane Bunting, Chair of the Elk River School Board.
Thank you.
I come today with my business lens on. It is the lens with which I took the seat on the board 3 years ago. And with that lens on, I was very eager to get my hands into the budget. I was surprised and elated to see that there was already an initiative afoot that was taking that budget apart line item by line item to begin to discover ways to chip money out of our budget. I am proud today to say that within the last 3 years, we've chipped $8 million out of our budget. That's been hard work, tough decisions, but good work. The thing is as we were doing that work, we also did something else. We compared ourselves to other similar districts. And believe it or not, that brought us back to the other large districts, because we are the eighth largest. It brought us back to other metro districts, of which we feel we are a part. And as we compared our financials, what we realized is somehow or another on the revenue side, we weren't getting as much as some of those other districts. With scrutiny at this point, we learned that indeed we had not been given that factor of 1.25 for being a metro area district. And as we went on to discover how many students actually resided in the areas or the counties of Anoka or Hennepin, we learned that 27% of our student population actually resided in areas other than Sherburne. Despite the fact our district office was in Sherburne. So that brings us here today, because what we are really doing is asking you to correct that. We feel that we not only are a metro area district, acting as a metro area district, but we know indeed we can say that the numbers of students within that area are growing. After Bloomberg's recent declaration that Rogers was one of the best places to raise kids, we don't know what to expect, and that being the southern part of our district. You know, a picture's worth a thousand words, and I've used words so far, but let me show you and point to the graph, the map. If you look at the Metro County map put out by MDE and exclude Elk River 728, it looks like there's a great big chunk taken out of the metro area. We'd like you to look at that map and say, we're the chunk. And we think we need to bring that chunk back with resolution through this bill. We know that, and we're sure, in the original legislation, that what was thought is metro area schools have higher costs. And there's no question we do. We're right there. And whether it's a labor or whether it's vendor contract prices, we are operating as a metro district. So today, my words are short. I'm a business person, after all. I've got another two-hour commute to get back to my business. We're asking for this correction to be made.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I really appreciate the fact that I wanted to give you a few numbers, because I think we're a numbers committee. Really means a lot. In the 12-13, the current fiscal year budget, per pupil school revenue statewide is $10,151. Minneapolis gets $14,203. The Elk River School District gets $9,487. That gap, that difference, that inequity is really big. Matter of fact, another one of my school districts, St. Michael, gets $7,666. Big Lake gets $8,466. And so the inequity between these, Mr. Chairman, is really, really important to us, because our students that are in the Elk River School District matter just as much as anybody else. But that difference of almost $5,000 per student just in that area alone is a big difference, especially when you have a growing school district and an area that does not have a lot of property tax base. So you get it on both sides. We have a school district that has really managed its money very, very well, worked very hard and frugal, just like our neighbors are. And they come from the neighborhood and have proven their ability to do that. Nonetheless, we understand that taking from those who have and redistributing it to those who have less may sound good maybe in the tax bill. However, we find that when it comes to education funding, we continue to see that every year the gap gets wider. Every time there's a percent increase, as you know, 10% of a bigger number is a bigger number than 10% of a smaller number. So as we go along year upon year upon year, this gap gets wider. We are not here with the bill today to rectify all that we think could be done. We would hope that in the future, when funding is there and adds into the per student school revenue, that it would be done on a dollar basis rather than a percent basis, so that each student is able to be treated equally in the basic funding that they get from the state of Minnesota on a go-forward basis. Because if you do it on a percent, the gap gets wider and the inequity gets higher. And our students deserve to be able to, when it comes from state funding and the basic formula in particular, to have that direction reversed and to start closing the gap. This bill today is just a small portion of what we see will help us that we feel is very justified in your current budget. And it's a modest amount, and I think would be very well. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I think my superintendent would like to add some words on this. It's near and dear to his heart.
Senator Stump had a question, and we'll go to the superintendent.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I do agree with this legislation, and I think the governor does too, in that you know, things change and the equity formula is you know, moves around, and it's there's so many factors to it, and as the metropolitan area districts grow, the laws or the regulations that we have in place don't seem to be adjustable enough, and so I think that this addresses one of those areas. But I really wanted to mention that I think Elk River's problem has been one of not being able to pass referendums, operating referendums.
It's part of it, yeah.
And the problem with not being able to pass operating referendums is really based on the fact that you have a low-value district. Mm-hmm. And when the law was changed that we did not, or we got rid of the general education levy, which was fully equalized at that time, that did not help those districts at all because basically it got to be much, much more difficult. And as Senator Kiffmeyer, you mentioned, the disparity between districts grew. And over the last 12 years, we have seen that disparity grow more and more and more, basically because districts cannot pass the referendums they need. So I think that that is probably the biggest problem that this legislature has to address, is how do we start narrowing that differential between those districts that have the capacity and those districts that do not. And I would hope that as we, you know, get into assembling solutions, that that would also become a part of the solution to at least be a long-range solution that would help for, you know, the foreseeable future.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Stumpf, you said it very well and captured, and that's where sometimes the history of education funding, it's so valuable on a committee member. It's even worse than that, though. If you spend $10 for a pizza and you get a $10 pizza, you figure that's a fair value. In our district, because of the property situation, when we levy money, we can't raise the same size pizza. We end up because, and you can only put so many demands on a district that's already been hard hit. You're right, Senator Stump. It is hard to do that. But they did renew the one and help maintain that. It's just, there's a second part of that in addition to that that really does affect us. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I will yield if I can.
Superintendent Bezek. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you look at rough numbers, just to go back to Senator Stump's point, we roughly have about $20 million less a year to run our district than compared to the west side of the metro area through a combination of different things, per pupil funding, debt service, excess levy, ability, what have you. So we roughly have $20 to $25 million less to run our operation. A couple points to the bill here. As it's written, it's really about a $100,000 bill. Now, it doesn't seem like a lot of money, but to us, that is a lot of money. And that's just reflecting the students that are in Hennepin and Anoka County, which are in the inclusion areas now, but we're not getting funding for them. And $25,000 of that is state aid. The rest is local levy. I would love to see this bill amended to include all of our students, or 13,000 or just under that. And that would be about a $400,000 item. And 92 of that would be state aid. The balance would be local levy. We have... Our contracts for labor and vendor emulate metro. They just are. They're metro contracts. They're not rural. We're not up with the cows anymore. And when I look at the metro region here that's receiving this, you know, some of these communities, there's more cows than there are people in them. And so, you know, four words really sum up. If you don't think we're metro, rush hour, early morning and evening. You know, that says it all. If you ever try and get down here from Elk River in the morning or up there after work, you know what Metro is. There's no difference.
As I believe was referenced earlier, the governor's proposal, which came from the work group, doesn't have the distinction Metro Rural for equity, and there's a lot that we need to discuss yet on all the various factors as we attempt to achieve fairness for everyone, but that distinction is no longer there for the Metro Rural for equity. So maybe you can give us some feedback on that aspect of the work group as well. Are there any other questions, Senator Johnson?
You spoke about Minneapolis. Their per pupil is 14,000 something, and yours is 9,000 something. And basically, you know, there's a basic formula for everyone, for each student, and then based on certain needs and criteria, different school districts get different amounts of money. So I just don't want to leave it sit without saying something that. That's kind of a dangerous thing to put forward. It pits maybe people one against another, and I don't think we're in that for this. We're in this for that reason. So you know, your free and reduced is 22.4, which gives an indication of the people that live in your community, in your school district. And I would guess Minneapolis district is probably 50% to 60% free and reduced, with major problems with non-English speaking students. So there's a reason why there is a difference in a per pupil amount. Secondly, you are next to the Metro, and the chair talked a little bit about planning. Is there a regional planning body out in your area? Like we have the Metropolitan Council. I live in Anoka County.
Mr. Chairman, we are not part of the Metropolitan Council. We do planning through coordinated efforts of our county and cities.
But is it, Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, is there a regional group that heads up that regional planning?
Senator Kiffmeyer or Dr. Bezik?
Dr. Bezik.
Yeah, Senator, anything like that we do on our own with, we have a group that meets, we try to meet at least a month or every 2 months to, again, talk with all the city planners and get a handle on what's happening with growth and what have you. And in the downturn of the economy, nothing was happening, so we had less meetings. Yes. Now we have to fire that up again because we're seeing some big subdivisions being planned and laid out and companies moving in. And in our growth, it starts down the south in Rogers, and it typically works its way up north. And that's what we're seeing again with the building permits.
And Mr. Chair,
Johnson.
Senator Kiffmeyer and school people. Certainly, Elk River is definitely the next jump to the metropolitan area, and expect someday it'll be all the way to St. Cloud because it's filling in up there, too, all the way. So, thank you.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr.
And
Chairman.
And just to announce, we do have two other bills where people have come outside the metro. And so we'll try to wrap this up in about 5 minutes.
We'll do so. Mr. Chairman, our board chair would like to comment.
Ms. Bunting.
To the question of do we belong to Met Council, I just wanted to say, yes, a part of our district does. My husband is mayor of Rogers, and I can guarantee we are part of Met Council. We pay our fiscal disparities. We definitely know we are a part of that group.
Okay. Senator Bonner, followed by Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, I have a similar bill.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Oh, sorry. Have it.
We work together.
Senator Kiffmeyer. I have a similar bill coming up this week on the Location Equity Index, and that really came from, you know, we've talked about it for years, but the governor's task force did include that as part of the overall recommendation, is to include that in it. It does make sense to include your community in that. I know I sometimes travel through your community and actually find that the gridlock, once you get, you know, just north of 394, all the way through your community is about the worst. So I can attest to that.
Could you also come to Transportation Committee?
Yes.
Okay.
Noted. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just maybe a comment that all of the comments about equity are certainly well-founded, and a lot of districts are in the same boat. You know, this issue in statute that where your district is located allows you additional aid has been around for a while. I remember a superintendent in our district at one time actually moved the district office 2 miles into Dakota County. You know, I'm not advocating that you move your district office.
Well, they're willing to move me.
It just shows you that maybe there's another issue that for future that we might look at in terms of how people get funded.
It should be based on zip code. I think we agree, but let's see what we come up with. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, closing remarks. Thank you, Mr.
Kiffmeyer.
Chair. Yeah, I know you've got other folks waiting. I just wanted to mention, though, that the numbers that I gave were excluding federal dollars, food service, community education, a variety of other things. If you add those things back in, Minneapolis is $18,346 and Elk River is $12,806. So you're right, Senator Johnson. There are those kinds of various factors I do, but even when you factor them in, I just want to put on the record, the gap is still there. But thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate your time and excellent questions, and thank you to my school members for making the trip all the way and being here, and for you as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer and testifiers for joining us, and we will lay Senate File 618 over.
Thank you.
Next, Senator Jensen with Senate File 494. And is Senator Tomassoni still here?
Yes.
Okay, and Senator Tomassoni, we'll get to you within 20 minutes, if that's okay.
Is there a need to?
Senator Jensen, could you yield to Senator Tomassoni? He has another conflict right now.
Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. We're
Thank
flexible,
you.
Chair.
Okay, thank you. Senator Tomassoni will take note that Senator Jensen yielded. And welcome, Senator Tomassoni.
In other words, you owe one.
We have before us Senate File 595, Small Schools Revenue Modification.
Mr. Chairman, I liked Senator Jensen right away when I met her.
Thank you.
Thank you, by the way.
Excellent.
Mr. Chairman, I do have something at 9:45 that I have to be at, so I appreciate this.
Yes.
Members, Senate File 595 is a bill that's referring to small schools revenue. And we have a very unique district in northern Minnesota called St. Louis County School District. It's bigger than some states, and it has a distance of about 200 miles from one end to the other. And there's four different high schools in it and several different grade schools and secondary schools, and the issue here is that alone these various schools would all qualify for the small schools revenue. When you add the whole district together in an attempt to consolidate the business offices and operations, none of them qualify. And so the fact of the matter is that the district did exactly what the state would like to see a district do in regards to trying to consolidate, but in the end, this particular type of revenue ends up not being able to go to these school districts, which it would have gone to had they not consolidated. And so I have with me the superintendent of schools, Teresa Knife Chief, who is can give you some of her challenges as being the superintendent of this district. And you have a handout that has some, or well, we have a handout here that we would like to give out that can give you some pretty good statistics as to why why this is a good idea and why the school district should qualify for this revenue.
Hey, welcome to the committee, Superintendent Chief. And are the schools open today in St. Louis County?
Yes, they are. We didn't get much snow up there, so we're lucky.
Okay.
We've had plenty of snow days already.
Okay. Yeah. Six inches to us is nothing.
Okay. Please proceed.
Superintendent Knife Chief, K-N-I-F-E-C-H-I-E-F. I look young now, but being in this unique district, I will quickly grow old, as I'm starting to feel already. As you look at your handout, I put some statistics on there, as Senator Thomasonian, thank you for getting this set up today for 2142. 2142 is very unique. A little history on 2142. Probably back before I was born. No, I'm not sure when it happened, but 2142 was actually operated by St. Louis County. When St. Louis County decided they didn't want to operate the schools, they created the school district of St. Louis County School District. Very unique. Five schools, four high schools, and one elementary. If you look at some of the statistics, as I put on there, we cover 2.7 million acres, or 4,200 square miles. And I attached a map of Minnesota so you can see how big St. Louis County School District actually is. Our buses drive 6,000 miles a day. We are two times larger than the next biggest district geographically. Our district borders 19 other school districts, ranging all the way from Duluth to the Canadian border. If you drive from one end to the school district to the next, it's a four-hour drive. And so that kind of gives you an example of my daily work schedule, of my traveling. As Elk River stated, they have more cows than students. We have more black bears than students. I believe the state should be encouraging consolidation. 2142 did it for efficiency, better education for the students, and I believe that we're doing that right now. I think the small schools revenue language actually discourages schools from considering consolidation, because if they do consolidate, then they're not eligible for the funding. Prior to the consolidation, our recent consolidation, there was three failed operating referendums. So currently, right now, passing another one would not be possible. And if you have any idea of the history or the turmoil that went on in St. Louis County regarding the last operating referendum, you'll understand why we probably won't pass another one. 2142 is rich in seasonal property value, but this does not pay for operating referendums. Surrounding small rural schools and around our area receive small schools funding, and I also attached that to the back page. If you look, there's some neighboring school districts such as Net Lake, Little Fork, Floodwood, who all receive the small schools funding. Each of these schools who surround us receive this funding, but unfortunately we do not. If you look at the bottom, those highlighted in yellow, those are all larger than our schools. Those in orange are larger than three of our schools in our district, and those in purple are larger than two of our schools in our district. So the neighboring school districts receive this, but unfortunately 2142 does not. But in our school districts, each of our school districts are so far spread. For example, Northwood School is 31 miles to the nearest high school. And so in essence, each of our schools are small rural schools in itself, each serving their own township, each serving their own communities, and in most part, many communities. For example, Northwood serves Orr, Cook, Crane Lake, Bear River. And so we are very unique in that aspect, but because we consolidated, because the language is wrote as it is, unfortunately, St. Louis County does not qualify. So we're just asking you to consider to amend the language.
Thank you, Superintendent. Questions? Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Superintendent, I have a cabin in Orr and actually live next door to the principal of the North.
Mr. Metza.
That's right. So, so I do understand that it really is a collection of small rural schools, and it you know, I've been working since I got here on trying to have more shared services across school districts and doing regional back office sharing to be more efficient. And so it is an unintended consequence. Here you've done all that, and you're doing an excellent job, and we penalize you by not just not giving you extra for doing it, but by taking away. And so I know resources are scarce, but I hope that we can find a way to do something on this.
Thank you.
Senator Stumpf.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering how you went about finding out how you had more black bear than students.
Superintendent Knife.
I live in the woods. I grew up on the Boy's Fort Reservation. My dad is an avid hunter, so he gave me the facts.
Do you have more moose than students?
We can't find them.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Stump.
You know, I think the anytime we create a formula, there's always problems with right around the edges of that formula. You know, if you look at the sparsity formula, or elementary sparsity, it's like 19 miles or something from the next closest district. And it gets down to be very difficult to write a formula from around this table that really addresses all the different circumstances, because you no more can get done with it and you find that you forgot something, you know, someplace. So I think the intent of the small schools funding was basically to help those districts that were very small, and small being defined as 1,000 students or less. This is just a problem that crops up when we do something like this. So you should be able to participate in that as well. But it is limited. What is it, $50 per pupil, I think? Or it's not a huge amount.
Yeah, there's a calculation in there of how much it would actually be. So.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was thinking exactly the same thing, Senator Stumpf, that every time I see the redrafting of a formula, I always question, what are we doing? And I would like to ask the staff, because what I want to do is correct these problems, and these formulas that we reinvent may offer a solution that is temporary until we do the next thing. And I am not sure that we have resolved the issues of underfunding schools in rural Minnesota, and we must do that. And so my question is, perhaps to the staff, does this redrafting of this formula changes the scope for other districts, or is this unique to this region? Are we resolving this region and then unresolving other regions? And how does that, you know, every time we do a formula, this formula applies to everyone. So I'd like to correct this issue with this region that Senator Tomassoni is bringing to us. Absolutely. Are we doing that with this, and what is the result for the rest of the state of Minnesota? Do we change the formula for everybody else as a result of it? And is that a good idea?
Senator Torres-Ray, our staff said he's ready to answer your question. or address it.
Okay. All right. Chairman, Senator, the fiscal note outlines which schools this applies to. And as to the other question, it's $500 per pupil unit as outlined in the fiscal note.
The small schools revenue, Madam Chairman, members, the small schools revenue is based on 10% of the base of what is now the basic formula allowance. It's not tied to the formula allowance. about 10% of 5224 times this kind of sliding scale between 0 and 1,000. So a school district that that has 999 students would receive, you know, pennies. A school district with 100 would receive about $455, give or take. Just as an example of kind of how this sliding scale works.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator James.
Madam Chair and Superintendent, unfortunately, these are some of the unintended consequences that happen with some of these things, and it certainly needs to be looked at and corrected. Could you tell me the size of your entire student population enrollment in your entire school district, and then your largest individual school and your smallest school?
Yes, I can. Our entire total population is roughly 1,900 students. Our largest school and that in our district is Northwoods, which is 553, followed by Southridge, which is by Duluth, and that's 487. Our next high school is Cherry, which is near Virginia, which is 381. And Northeast Range, which is near Babbitt, is 326. And we have one elementary school that's 85, and that's in Tower.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Thomasoni.
Senator Dames, just being familiar with the area, if you drive from one to the other, you're going to be in the car for a really long time.
Right. But I think therein lies the, yeah, I mean, certainly lies the issue. You've done a good job of consolidating, so you have 1,900 total students, but you're being penalized because of that with, you know, all your schools would qualify if you were individual schools. So certainly something that needs to be looked at and certainly tried to modify, be modified and corrected. Okay. Thank you, Superintendent. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions, members? If not, we will lay the bill over and to be possibly included in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Committee
Thank
members,
you.
I appreciate the discussion.
You're welcome.
Senator Jensen. Has Senate File 494, which is Minnesota State Academies. It's regarding the Minnesota State Academies.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Jensen.
I knew we were going to save the best for last.
Yes, absolutely. That was very nice of you.
Well, I'm here today to present to the committee Senate File 494, and it has to do with, like you stated, the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and the Blind. The Academy for the Blind was actually instituted in 1866, and for the deaf in 1863, and I just would like to note that this year in 2013, they're celebrating their 150th anniversary. What the bill has to do with, though, there was something that was brought to my attention that has to do with the facilities in the kitchen. Currently, I had, even though this academy is in my district, I had not had the opportunity to take a tour or visit the academies. So I did have that opportunity once I was elected and decided to go and visit. And what I'd like to share with this committee is the thing that struck me the most as I walked around on the grounds, and I have with me today Superintendent Brad Harper, and he explained to me what happens at these academies. And the students that go to the academies, a lot of them are residents of the academy. So they're there from preschool to 12th grade and stay all day. So the experience that they get at the academies has a lot to do with not only the academics that they're receiving there, but also the social skills and the ability to live with each other and learn some of those things as well. When they're there that long, they also have to provide nutrition and food. And for them, it's three meals a day. And what's been happening is, as I understand it, the stoves in the facility, if you look on the handout, you can see are from the 1950s. So the academies have been great stewards with taxpayer money, and getting those pieces of equipment, valuable equipment, to provide that nutritional things that they have to do for their students. And it's gotten to the point now where, unfortunately, I was going to have Katie Roth here, who is the student nutrition director. She was unable to make it because of the snow. But what she stated is that sometimes it's a daily maintenance on the equipment that you see listed on the handout. And even to the point where they are having trouble now finding parts for the equipment. That's how old that it is. So with that, I'd like you to take a look at the handout, and I'll turn it over to
Your superintendent?
Superintendent, yes.
Is?
Brad Harper.
Brad Harper. Mr. Harper. Superintendent Harper.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for the introduction, Senator Jensen. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear before the committee. The first thing I would like to say is that please visit. It's a wonderful campus. It's a state agency, which is different than most of the educational schools or the educational issues or systems that you will end up dealing with, but it is a unique facility. There's two campuses, Minnesota State Academy for the Deaf, which is the larger of the two, and the Minnesota State Academy for the Blind, which is located about a half a mile away from the MSAD campus. There are approximately 200 students on both campuses, 150 on MSAD, and about 50 on Minnesota State Academy for the Blind. Many people will say the cost differential or the cost for operating school for these is questionable because of the small number of students that you have. But what's important to realize is that these are all high-demand special education students. They fall outside the mainstream environment. It's not possible for them to be successful. Well, most of the time, it's not possible for them to be successful in the mainstream environment, although we do have several students that are attending mainstream classes in Faribault. I'm new, very new to this whole process. I started in August, and the learning curve has been pretty much a straight line going up as I learned to deal with the different issues in the community, both the deaf community and the blind community, to learn the different rules and regulations that govern the academies and how that operates within the state system. It's a tremendous challenge, and this is one of the latest challenges to try to rectify, which is the stoves and the dishwashing equipment on the MSAD campus. I am a little bit chagrined that I'm not as prepared as other people at these presentations. Like I said, this is my first time going through the legislative process, and I hope to be a little bit more professional in terms of presentations in the future. So with that, I'd love to answer any questions that you may have and turn it over to the chair.
I have one question, Superintendent Harper. Is your enrollment growing or declining? I was going to ask you how many students were they at the schools. You answered that, so that was good. Is the enrollment growing or declining?
From what I've been told, Madam Chair, the enrollment has been increasing over the last 3 years. There was a decline or stabilization for a few years with a small decline, but over the last 5 years, enrollment has been growing.
Thank you. Any other questions for either the author or the superintendent?
Wow.
I have one question more, and that is, what would you do if this allocation was not provided?
Madam Chair, we would continue doing what we are doing now, which is improvising, using the creativity and ingenuity of our maintenance staff to jury-rig things to make sure that they work.
Mm-hmm. And Superintendent, I know that sometimes does come to an end, however. Senator Kent.
This may be more of a question for staff. In terms of how the academies are set up for these types of capital improvements, obviously there is a real need here, and I'm just wondering if this is the standard way that these things are addressed or if there is a process in place within the academies.
Would you like to address that, Senator Jensen, or would you rather have staff?
Well, what I can tell you, Senator Kent, is that they're given an appropriation legislatively and then they're asked to. There is one fund that they can do. Is it special project?
Asset preservation.
Asset preservation with, but otherwise there is the bonding process, and we will, because it's not a bonding year. It's unfortunate, and I think it's important to bring it before this committee and let the legislature know that this is an issue that needs to be taken care of. But we will pursue that as well if something else happens. I will pursue that because we need to get this done.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Senator Dames.
Madam Chair and Superintendent, not that that should have any, my question should have any bearing on this, but Senator Jensen, you referred to an appropriation. Can either one of you tell me how much that appropriation is per student?
I'm not aware of that, but maybe.
Superintendent
Harper.
Excuse me. I have to maintain or remember the protocol.
It's for the tape, you realize. You
yes.
Know, so, good. Thank you.
I don't have a per student breakdown on that, but our appropriation is $11.6 million last year. There was a $1 million asset preservation fund or appropriation also. That's what I understand about our finances at this point.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question well enough?
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Senators? No? Okay. If there are no other questions, Senator Jensen and Superintendent Harper, we will lay this over, and it will be considered for the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And members, as far as I can see, there is no further agenda. Is that correct? So meeting will be adjourned. Okay. Thursday announcement. Thursday, March 7th. I believe I heard the chair say that it starts at 8:15.
Wednesday.
Oh, tomorrow.
In the SOB.
Okay. Oh, it's in the SOB. Okay, I missed that one. I'm sorry. There's a joint hearing starting at 8:15 with the House Education Finance Committee. A report from the legislative auditor on special education. So check your schedules. Thank you. Thursday.